The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Columbus and D-Mac.
James Milet from DenverFan.com in for D-Mac. Tyler Columbus is here. So, Tyler, there's been this narrative that's been developing here in town where people are saying, hey, you know, pump the brakes on Russell Wilson's first year here in Denver, especially early, because you got to remember a decade ago when Peyton Manning came here, they started slow. I mean, they were 2-3.
Right.
They were down 24-0 at halftime in week 6 before the miracle comeback
in
San Diego.
So you can be specific if you want to. You could say, Tyler, you've been saying to lower your expectations for the first half of the season. You could say my name if you want to say it.
You're one of them, so sure. For this segment, Tyler, you've been saying this nonsense.
There's people out there that are saying this. You know, I happen to be on your show with you today, Tyler.
It's like the media guy who...
I happen to have listened to your show, but I've heard people have pushed this agenda.
It's like the reporter who does that when he's asking a tough question.
Right. Other people say your red zone sucks, but yeah.
So you've been saying this, Tyler.
Yeah.
And here's why I think it's nonsense. And I wrote a column about this at DenverFan.com. So there's two big differences between 2012 and 2022. First and foremost, the situation with the two quarterbacks. Peyton Manning hadn't played in a football game in 20 months.
Okay.
He was coming off of 4 neck surgeries. At one point during that 20-month span, he couldn't throw a ball more than 5 yards. He had to reteach himself a new way of playing the position and throwing a ball. He had to wear a glove on his hand because he couldn't grip the ball because he didn't have full feeling back in his hands.
Yep.
Russell Wilson's just coming off a normal offseason, right? He played in the season finale a year ago. He missed three games.
He was hurt last year, but not like Peyton Manning.
But he came back. Like, he's just...
Only 3 games?
Yeah, it seemed like he missed a long time.
Wow, it did feel like more than that.
He played in 14 games. I was like, okay. Really? It was only 3? Came back probably too early because he was not good his first couple of games back. He got better as the year went on. But that's night and day difference. Like, Peyton Manning had to relearn to play the position and kind of had to do it on the fly in those early games. Whereas Russell Wilson, he's more like Matthew Stafford going from Detroit to L.A. Just hit the ground running. So that's the first one.
Oh, my gosh. I've got so much. Like, I want to argue so many things already.
Okay.
I'm just going to stay on the most recent one right there, and then I'm going to work my way backwards. And I know you haven't even finished your point here just yet, but the Matthew Stafford going to the Rams, you can't do that. You can't do that. Well, who were the Denver Broncos versus the Rams? Did Matthew Stafford get traded to a team that was stacked, ready to rock and roll, or did he get traded to a team that had missed the playoffs for the last 6 years?
All I've heard is that this team is stacked. They're just missing a quarterback.
No, tell me
That's
reality.
What I've heard.
Tell me reality.
I think the Rams missed the playoffs the year before he got there.
Okay, you cannot compare the Rams roster to the Denver Broncos roster.
Mm.
The Peyton Manning one. That's interesting, and that's your best argument. So
that's only point one. So you're already liking my points.
Okay, no, but I'm about to destroy it. I haven't let you get to all your points yet, but I'm just too excited.
I only have two.
I'm too gung ho. Okay, give me your second one.
The second one is the schedule at the start of that year was much different. So they won week 1 against Pittsburgh, 31-19. They lost week 2 down in Atlanta. Atlanta started the year 8-0. That was a good Atlanta team. They came back here and lost week 3 to Houston. Houston was 12-4 that year. It was a good Houston team. Then they won in week 4, and then they lost week 5 in New England, 31-21, to a Patriots team that went to the AFC title game.
Okay.
So they lost to 3 really good teams. This year, they opened with the Seahawks, bad team. Atlanta, maybe the worst team in the league. Home against the Niners. Okay, that could be a tough game. Depends on who's playing quarterback.
Yeah.
At Vegas, winnable game. That'll be half Broncos fans. And then they get a gift of a Thursday night home game against the Colts. Those 5 games are significantly easier than what Peyton Manning rolled into.
Well, the first 2 games, sure. I would argue the rest of those, they're not that easy. But I'll give you the first 2 for sure. I'm going to work my way back here. Number one, you can't compare the Denver Broncos roster to the Rams. They had superstars all over the place. They had the best player in the NFL and Aaron Donald. They had all kinds of superstars. Broncos have got a good roster. How many superstars do we have? So probably zero.
That's fine, but we're changing the narrative now that we have a quarterback. Because all I heard was how great this roster was, and Pro Football Focus ranked it the sixth best roster in the NFL.
Well, I'm just living within reality here.
So real quick, thanks to our listeners in Boulder for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. Go Buffs. Thank you.
Shout out. Go Buffs. Love my folks out there in Boulder. We're not the Rams. That's number one. I'll give you the schedule part. Okay, the first two games, that's about all you could ask for. The Seattle one's tougher than you would think because you're going out to Seattle. It's a tough place to play.
Well,
and by the way,
lose.
You've got that predicted as a loss.
I do, but I haven't started. How
are you sitting here talking about how easy the schedule is when you've got that one scheduled as a loss?
Well, I have them starting 4-1.
Okay. All right. So you've got that one as the only loss in the first five games.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to
It'll be a late drive by Drew.
I'm going to go to the most important thing here. Now, you're saying you can't compare Peyton Manning to Russell Wilson because Peyton was coming off of injury. Russell Wilson is not coming off an injury like that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the most
important
thing
here.
Night and day.
Apples and oranges. They're both not even, like, that's not even a near enough comparison.
You know what else is apples and oranges? I love Russell Wilson. I'm fired up to have Russell Wilson as the Denver Broncos quarterback. That is an apples and oranges comparison, even putting Russell Wilson in the same ballpark as Peyton Manning. Okay, Peyton Manning was hurt.
Oh.
But Peyton Manning, nope, listen.
Come on.
At that point in time, it was arguable who the greatest quarterback was going to be. Was it going to be Peyton Manning or was it going to be Tom Brady? Tom Brady ran away with it. Obviously, there's no argument at this point in time. But Peyton Manning was either the best or the second best quarterback in the NFL. Russell Wilson, he's not even in the top five right now. He's not in the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, and I love Russell Wilson. I'm fired up about having Russell Wilson, but you cannot compare the impact of Russell Wilson to Peyton Manning on any organization because Russell has never been in the same territory as Peyton Manning.
Well, he also didn't play in a – he played in a system where they wanted to run the ball and play defense. Basically, he played for Vic Fangio to be a cheerleader, whereas – Peyton Manning played the system where it was like, hey, Peyton, go do whatever you want.
We're about to find out whether that was smart or not.
We are, and you're right.
I happen to think that Pete Carroll's a pretty dang good coach, I know he's a defensive guy. I think they knew their quarterback relatively well, and Russell Wilson needs a running game. There's no question he needs a running game.
It's a little bit like people saying John Elway didn't put up as good of numbers as Dan Marino, so he wasn't as good a quarterback. It's like, well, one guy had Don Shula who let him do whatever he wanted. The other guy had Dan Reeves who wanted to keep it close and then say, all right, John, there's 242 to go win it, right? So I think that's different, but I think Russell Wilson, cerebral guy. Is he as cerebral as Peyton Manning? Probably not, but like he's close, better athlete, can move around, throws a better deep ball, certainly at this point.
He's just not even comparable. You can't compare the quarterbacks. You cannot. They're not even remotely in the same ballpark. And I'm not done yet, KJ, so you don't tell me to break because I'm not done just yet, okay? The one thing that you have not brought up that you cannot discount, was John Fox, I get it, he wasn't the guy.
No.
He wasn't the guy. Was John Fox a veteran coach? Did he have a system? Did he know what he was doing? Had he been around the block? Had he learned his mistakes? Had he gone through his rookie growing pains? Had he done all that? Yes, he was a well-respected veteran coach that did not have to go through the growing pains that Nathaniel Hackett is going to have to go through, that almost every young coach that is not named Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur has always had to go through. Nathaniel Hackett is not going to be the best coach in the NFL in the first month of the season.
Well, John Fox was never that. For the first 3 years Peyton Manning was here, the only guy who could stop him was John Fox.
No, he was never the best coach, but John Fox was a very respectable head coach.
John Fox took a knee against Baltimore with time still on the clock.
Peyton Manning wanted to take a knee, for the record.
John Fox didn't think ahead and think, hey, there might be crowd noise in the Super Bowl because Seattle fans travel well.
I'm not saying John Fox was the best coach in the world, but I'm saying he was a veteran that didn't have to go through. Nathaniel Hackett doesn't even know what his schedule is. Nathaniel Hackett doesn't know how he wants to run the building. Nathaniel Hackett doesn't know what his own mantra is just yet.
And
Hackett is going to have games where he calls all of his timeouts and he blows it, and you're going to be like, oh, we got Vic Fangio 2.0.
I can't imagine being as bad as Vic Fangio.
He will have a game that he blows it because a head coach can blow it. So, look, I'm not sitting here saying don't have high expectations for the Denver Broncos, but I am saying it's insane to think that the Denver Broncos are going to come out and have in a year like Russell or like Peyton Manning did and go 13-3.
I just don't think we can excuse the 2-3 start and say, well, that happened with Peyton, because I think the situations are vastly different. I think we need to stop having a titchophobia and stop having fear of expectations.
Okay.
Like, this is a team that should come out of the gates
You've used that word. You clearly Googled that word like last week, and it's been your word of the week. You used it a few times now.
We need to have expectations. It's okay. Dude, we should embrace
it. Let me tell you what else is okay. If the Broncos are 500 after the first five or six games, well, it's got to be six. That's okay.
If they're three after six games, they're going to finish below 500, and it is going to be panic time in the Mile High City.
You're out of your mind. If you're panicking after the first six games of what's supposed to be a 10-year run with Russell Wilson, you're crazy,
dude. I panicked after the first game of the Vic Fangio era when they went up to Oakland and were unprepared. And you know what? The panic was on the money because it was the first game of 49 disasters.
I got to stop yelling at you because KJ is telling me I got to stop, dude. But just know that in my mind, I'm still yelling at you.
All right. According to a fancy stat from ESPN, the Broncos have the second best chance to win the AFC West. Do we agree with these numbers or do we think it's off base? We'll get after that coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac on Denver's sports station 104.3 The Fan.
James, I think we should bail on what we had planned here.
Okay.
We should continue the conversation we were just having and figure out where does Russell Wilson land in NFL top QBs right now.
Okay, I like the audible.
Because that's what it all boils down to for me.
It does.
When we're comparing Peyton Manning to Russell Wilson, I think you got to figure out who is Russell Wilson right now.
So you said on the air that he was not a top five quarterback in the league.
Right.
Not to talk out of school, but during the break you said you're not even sure he's a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, I'm not positive. Like, I want to go through it.
So in order to dispel that or to prove it, we got to start naming them. So let's start. And you don't have to go in any particular order, but who off the top of your head, who are the quarterbacks in the league right now that are better than Russell Wilson?
Well, I'll go in order a little bit because I think it's a little bit easier that way. I mean, number one, I would say Aaron Rodgers. Okay. He is the current MVP. He's allegedly the best player in the NFL.
Okay.
Number two.
I'm not going to argue that.
Number two, I would say Tom Brady. Now, some people might argue that one. I don't know. Where would you put Tom Brady? Ballpark top five or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on. He's Tom Brady. If I had to win a game tomorrow, he'd be my number one pick.
Okay, I wouldn't fight that. Right. No. I mean, you got to win one game. It's not about longevity. We're just talking about this season, right?
I'm not going to argue with you on Tom Brady one bit. I'm not going to argue Aaron Rodgers either. Kay. So you got two.
So Aaron Rodgers, one and two, give or take wherever they're going to come, okay?
Yep.
After that, it's got to be Mahomes. He's got to be number three.
Without a doubt.
Now, we're probably getting into debatable territory here, and we probably don't need to get hung up all too much on the specific order that they come in, as long as we more or less agree that they're top five, top 10 guys, okay? Number four for me, I would put Josh Allen. Who would you put at number four?
I would take Josh Allen over Russell Wilson, yes.
Okay.
I would probably put him, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the order for this exercise. I would put him ahead of Russell Wilson, so yes.
Number five, I would go Matt Stafford.
No. Not ahead of Russell Wilson.
All right. So I'll circle that name. It doesn't really matter too much about the order. I'm just doing it just for my sanity. It helps here a little bit.
Very good quarterback, but if I had to win a game tomorrow, I'm taking Russell Wilson.
Okay. Let's see. After Matt Stafford, probably Joe Burrow.
Not even close.
Oh, okay.
Not even close.
All right. I mean, I think you've got a fair argument on that one for
Joe Burrow. A really promising young quarterback's already been to a Super Bowl. I think the future's bright in Cincinnati. But would I take Russell Wilson or Joe Burrow? That's easy. Every day of the week and twice on Sunday, I'm taking Russell Wilson.
Okay, now we're getting into the territory.
These are two of your top six already.
Now we're getting into the territory where I think we could easily debate whether Russell Wilson is better than anybody that is left.
Okay.
I'm looking at a list of quarterbacks right now. I do think I'd put Russell Wilson at number seven. That's probably where he's going to land on my list.
So Stafford and Burrow, you're keeping ahead of him.
Yeah, I am. Eight, I'd probably put, I guess, Deshaun Watson. I mean, despite whatever you think about the guy.
Sure. But if he had no off-field issues, just as a quarterback, I would not pick him.
That's all I'm talking about.
I would not pick him over Russell Wilson ever. I do think the off-field issues are part of it because that is a leadership position.
I do too. And I think it's fair to question, I don't think I could ever be the same.
Do you think the change in terms of the vibe around the team in Cleveland is going to be as significant with Deshaun Watson coming in as it's been here with Russell Wilson?
Absolutely not.
So
no.
That's why I think it matters. So Deshaun Watson, yeah, he's a really talented player. He also went 4-12 his last season playing a full year.
Yeah. Nine, I'd probably put Lamar Jackson, even though I don't think he's even comparable in terms of true quarterbacks, just impact on the field, I'd put him on there. 10, I don't know. So I've got Russell Wilson at number 7. He's a top 10 QB in the NFL. That's not even close to comparing Peyton Manning. At that point in his career, Peyton Manning was arguably number 1 or number 2.
No, he hadn't played in 20 months. And the other part of this is he's 5 on my list. Two of the guys ahead of him are in their 40s.
Sure.
So he's basically third. Well, Brady is a year removed from making $37.5 million a year to potentially be a mediocre color analyst on NFL broadcast. And Aaron Rodgers has got 2 years left, maybe?
Okay, so this would be a different conversation if we were saying, who do we want to build a franchise around? That's not what the conversation was, though. I'm just saying the best quarterbacks in the NFL this year. And that's how we are assuming how well they should play, right?
Okay, well, because I would contend, and this is just going off the top of my head, and we got a little bit of research time coming up.
Okay.
When we come back, I'll tell you who the quarterbacks were heading into 2012.
Oh, that's fun.
They
right,
were
that's
ahead
fun.
Of Peyton Manning. One of them is going to be the same. Probably two of them are the same. I'm guessing Rodgers and Brady are both on the list.
Yeah.
But were there more? Because I have Russell Wilson 5.
Ooh, was Rodgers better than him at that? No way.
I'm being objective here. I had him 5.
All right, that's
Rodgers,
fun.
Brady,
I like that.
Mahomes,
like that.
Josh
okay.
Allen. Were there 4 quarterbacks heading into 2012 that were better than Peyton Manning? It's research time. We'll tell you the results coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Baby, I'm playing on you tonight. Hunt you down.
All right, Tyler, we've gone to the research department.
Yes.
Which means I broke out my MacBook during the commercial break.
I like it.
So here, just to reset the argument here, I was going back to my column from Monday at DenverFan.com where I said I'm tired of hearing people, and by people I mean you,
yep,
comparing 2012 Russell Wilson's first season in Denver with 2022 Russell Wilson's first season with 2012 Peyton Manning's first year in Denver. Because the situations were distinctly different. Peyton Manning was coming off the injury, hadn't played in 20 months, and the schedule was easier in 2012 than it is, or harder in 2012 than it is this year.
Hey, let me make this really easy, really quick.
Yeah.
I totally agree. No chance the Broncos go 13-3. You can't compare those two seasons.
So, you...
No chance.
You want to give them a free pass. You have a tichophobia. You're afraid of expectations. If they're 2-3, 3-3, you're going to be fine with it. I'm going to be hitting the panic button. Because I think they got to come out of the gates strong. I have them at 4-1 after those first 5 games compared to the 2-3 a decade ago. Then that turned into, well, Peyton Manning was, the second best quarterback behind Tom Brady in the league?
Yeah, or arguably even number 1 at the time.
You said that Russell Wilson wasn't a top 5, maybe not even a top 10 quarterback. We went through the exercise. I had him 5th.
I had him 7th.
You had him 7th. So then heading into the break, it was, okay, well, was Peyton Manning at the time, because we got to remember, he hadn't played in 20 months.
Okay.
Any team in the league could have signed him. He was a free agent.
Yep.
There was 10 that went after him. So that tells us a little bit. He wasn't the 22nd best quarterback in the league heading into that year. I'm not going to be that nuts. But I think there are at least 4 guys who heading into the season we would have said were ahead of Peyton Manning heading into that 2012 season. So what I did to provide me a starting point was the passing leaders for the season before, 2011.
All right.
The year he didn't play.
All right.
So, and I'm going on yardage. Number 1, Drew Brees. That's the height of Drew Brees.
Okay. We can't just go off of passing yardage.
I know, but that's a Hall of Fame quarterback.
It's not as simple as that. Drew Brees, hell of a quarterback.
He threw 46 touchdowns
and
14 picks.
Was Drew Brees ever in his entire career better than Peyton Manning? Zero chance.
That year, more teams would have gone into the season and said, we'll take Drew Brees over Peyton Manning.
If you're trying to use the argument that nobody believed in Peyton Manning, that's a fair argument. Yeah, there's a lot of teams that would have chosen Drew Brees, but Peyton Manning was a four-time MVP when the Denver Broncos signed him.
Who couldn't throw the ball and had no feeling in his hands.
And when he got here, turned out to be better than he ever was.
Which is a remarkable comeback story.
Yeah,
it doesn't get enough play.
Yeah.
But Drew Brees threw for 5,400 yards, 46 touchdowns.
I won't interrupt you on everybody.
Tom Brady was second.
Okay.
Your guy, Matthew Stafford, was third. Eli Manning was fourth. Manning wasn't better than his brother, ever. Aaron Rodgers was fifth, was first team All-Pro, so Aaron Rodgers would go ahead of him. Philip Rivers, no. Tony Romo?
All right, forget the stats. I mean, just rank them. Like who that year? Who are the best quarterbacks?
Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and probably.
So you're saying Drew Brees is better than Tom Brady?
No, I'm not going in order. I'm going Tom Brady was one, Aaron Rodgers was two, Drew Brees was three, and I would probably say
Matt Ryan was up there. That's
Matt Ryan MVP type. Matt Ryan.
I mean, he was balling.
So probably Matt Ryan. Yeah. Big Ben was still Big Ben. Cam Newton was a young player at that point. So there's a handful of guys.
Okay,
Tony Romo.
I'm going to make a small concession to you here, okay? I think you could argue about where Peyton Manning was. I mean, if I did my top few guys, I would say Tom Brady 1, Peyton Manning 2, Aaron Rodgers 3, Matt Ryan number 4. That's how I would do it the year that Peyton Manning came to the Denver Broncos. And I don't care that he was out of football for the last year. I'm going off of the evidence that I've got of what they've accomplished over the course of their career, and that's what they had accomplished. So, yeah, I would have Peyton Manning either as number 1 or number 2. But here's a small concession that I'll make to you. Okay, whether Peyton Manning was 2, whether he was 3, whether he was 4, there is a negligible difference between the third best quarterback in the NFL and the seventh best quarterback in the NFL. That's I think there's a difference. It's a strong difference. It's probably a difference of a couple games over the course of the season, but it's not that big of a difference. So I'm actually going to make a small concession here on the difference of how good the two guys were. I think there's definitely a separation there. Russell Wilson's never been considered the best quarterback in the NFL. He's never even got an MVP vote, yet alone had 4 of those things by the time he got to the Denver Broncos. There's definitely a separation between the two. But I would say if you're just looking like on the surface when Peyton Manning arrived versus when Russell Wilson arrives, the difference in total wins, I would give that an extra 3 wins for Peyton Manning.
So if Russell Wilson was
if you put Russell Wilson on the same team that Peyton Manning came into, I would say that team wins about 10 games, whereas Peyton Manning wins 13 games.
Okay, and I just disagree. I think it's a team that was 8-8 the year before with Tim Tebow. Peyton Manning made him a 5-game improvement. I think Russell Wilson makes him a 4 or 5-game improvement.
Okay,
because they started off 2-3 and shouldn't have. Because Peyton Manning had to relearn to play the game. The game down in Atlanta started 8-0 that year. They were good. Matt Ryan, going to the point of how good he was.
Turns out Peyton Manning, he was pretty good. In fact, he was better than he ever was.
But he was terrible in that game. And heading into the season, it took them some time to get used to Peyton Manning being here, or the transition took some time. Not because Peyton Manning was still trying to figure out, oh, man, where's the film room? And, gosh, what's Coach Gase's first name? And, you know, who are these receivers and all that kind of stuff. What had nothing to do with that was that he was relearning to play the game and to play quarterback more than anything else. That's why I don't think Russell Wilson gets a free pass.
You're saying he wins 13 games?
Yeah.
Oh,
with Darius Thomas and Eric Decker.
Russell, is that you?
And
can't,
that defense with Vaughn
Miller.
I mean,
this is where you're losing your mind. Like, I'm trying to find some mutual ground here and say it's not that big of
a
difference.
I'll give you 12. He wins 12.
No, dude.
Yes.
Peyton Manning was a 4-time MVP. You can't compare Russell Wilson and Peyton Manning.
Who, before he came to play for the Broncos, was throwing passes to Todd Helton in the bowels of Coors Field and couldn't throw it 10 yards.
What had he done the years that he played? Every single year that he played.
But
Like outside of his rookie year, did he ever have a bad year?
No, but nobody knew what he was going to be after 4 neck surgeries.
I get it, but
he's having to fly to Germany to get experimental treatments.
We know what we know now.
He turned out to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league in 2012. We didn't know it heading into the season, so they started slowly because of that.
My small concession to you is that I think it's not that big of a difference. So it's a couple games, but there's definitely a difference there. The one thing that I think you are majorly discounting is you are discounting the value that John Fox had. And I know you don't think that John Fox is a good coach. I get it. He wasn't the guy. They replaced him. They won a Super Bowl. I understand it. But John Fox, at that point in his career, was absolutely a better coach than Nathaniel Hackett is right now. Now, Hackett, I hope, is going to be a better coach than John Fox. I would certainly hope. But at that point in his career, John Fox was a veteran that had been around the block. He knew his system. He knew what he was about. Nathaniel Hackett doesn't know any of that. So that's why I just don't care what happens in the first four or five games of the season this year, because I'm on a long-term horizon here.
John Fox was Vic Fangio with a lucky horseshoe in his pocket. That's what he was. He stumbled into Tim Tebow. He stumbled into Peyton Manning. What did he do when he went to Chicago? Nothing. By the way, he had the Chicago job before he coached a playoff game for the Broncos. He's always going to be Benedict Arnold to me for that.
I just can't get over the fact that we're assuming that Nathaniel Hackett is going to be a great coach on day one.
I'm not saying he's going to be great.
And he's never done anything.
I think he's got to be better than Vic Fangio with a lucky horseshoe.
I think he'll be better than Vic Fangio.
If not, it was a disastrous hire.
Let's hope.
If they went through all that process and he's not better than Vic Fangio, just pull a name out of the hat next time.
Right. We've got problems.
Yeah. All right. So I think we maybe settled that. Kind of.
A little bit. I mean, you're mostly wrong. Not as wrong as I originally thought, but you're definitely wrong.
Okay. Well, hey, you know what? I'm going to take that as a small victory for me that I was only mostly wrong in your mind. All right. The Avs got it done last night. It took a little extra time. They went to overtime, got the 3-2 win over the Blues to take a 1-0 lead in the series. DenverFan.com's Rachel Vigil was there. We'll find out what her take on the game was coming up next.
Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
All the small things.
The Avs escaped with a win in Game 1 against the Blues last night. Our own Rachel Vigil was there. We'll get her on the line here shortly, Tyler, get her sense of what went down at Ball Arena. I think escape is the word for the game.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
It's a game they should have won handily when you just look at the numbers. Every statistic other than goals, they dominated, and they couldn't get any breaks. They couldn't get any puck luck. They had some mistakes that were their own doing. Cale Makar sort of fumbled the puck that turned into the Ryan O'Reilly goal, which, by the way, Ryan O'Reilly, I know he's maybe not very popular with the fans, but his ability to snatch that puck and get it in the net was like, if you ever want just an example of here's how good hockey players are.
Here's how you capitalize.
With handling a stick and handling a puck. It was amazing. Now, I was mad at the time because it put the Avs down 1-0, but it was a pretty remarkable play. Cale Makar did not play very well last night.
I didn't notice him. I don't know if he didn't play well. I guess I wasn't watching him enough. Hockey is a weird sport where you literally track the puck, and it's hard to keep your eye on everybody that's out there. You don't have to rewind. They don't have to stop and go like you do of other sports.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't feel his impact like we have been previously. You know, pardon the pun, but I think you could easily make the exact same argument for the Blues. I think they escaped an absolute avalanche of goals that should have happened against them, right? The Avs escaped what could have been potentially an upset in a game in which they absolutely dominated. But man, the team that really got lucky there, the Avalanche didn't get lucky. The Blues got lucky. They were in a game that they had no business being in, that they were absolutely getting dominated. I have a hard time using the word escape for the Avalanche when they dominated the game the way that they did.
Well, no, and I see what you're saying. But the Blues, if the game had gone how it should have, they would have lost. And they lost anyway, so the result was the same. I think the Avs escaped from the standpoint of, boy, that would have been a tough one to stomach, right?
Yeah.
You did everything basically right that you should have. You had 81 shots, 54 of which got to the goalie, to Binnington, 27 of which were blocked by one of his teammates. 81 shots, and you come up short, that would have been tough to stomach. So you escaped the disaster.
Yeah,
I guess is how I look at it. Let's head out to the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Bring in DenverFan.com's Rachel Vigil. And Rachel, we did the post game show last night. Scrappy Will Peterson, you know, he had his broom, he had his pom pom. He was talking about how the Avs didn't look rusty. I thought they did a little bit. I thought there were some mistakes that just sort of looked like a team that hadn't played in a while. You were the tiebreaker last night. Share with Tyler and with the listeners kind of what your take was from being down at Ball Arena, whether or not the Avs looked like they were a little rusty.
They were definitely a little rusty, and I think what happened out on the ice also reflected what was happening in the stands. It felt super off for the first period. It was just the energy wasn't quite there for it being a home playoff game. It just definitely reflected what was happening down on the ice around the arena, too. And, of course, we always hear how players feed off of the energy of the fans and everything like that. So could have had something to do with it, too. But it just definitely felt off. And I don't think that you can honestly say that this team was on point last night with how many shots they did put in. And yet this game went into overtime, and yet how many they actually put in the back of the net. They were off for the first period. There's nothing else to it.
That's interesting that you point out the environment felt a little bit off. I mean, the Avalanche fans, they get a lot of credit, and deservedly so. They're very loyal. It's a great home ice advantage. But you think that the environment felt a little bit stale as well, huh?
Yeah, and I think that probably had more to do so with the Avalanche rather than the fans. I think they were feeding off of what the team was putting out.
What was going on? I mean, you're hanging up there with DMAC and the rest of the media. What was the vibe up there? I mean, was were people feeling nervous? Were they feeling like the Avs were, you know, just not getting the breaks that they deserved? What do you think the headlines were about to read if it didn't go the way that it did in overtime?
I think there would have been a lot of talk about how this second round has been looming over this team and what that would have to do and how they just can't overcome it. I think there would have been a lot of talk about kind of the failure that would have been. And I think there's still some questions. Obviously, people are talking about how, you know, maybe this is the year that they can overcome this second round playoff series and we don't have to worry about it. They're a totally different team. They've got depth. They've got strength. But it still went into OT when they should have honestly probably have won 7-2. So the talk up in the press wasn't very nerve-wracking, I would say, probably in like the last couple of minutes. Everyone was kind of like, okay, like this could definitely happen. They could lose this first game. And obviously you don't want to give up a game on your own home ice. But I would say pretty much mainly all throughout the game, everyone felt pretty confident in this Avs team. But it was probably like the last 3 minutes or so that everyone was kind of like, all right, what's going on here? Because it just felt like they got away from themselves and from the like Avalanche hockey that they know and that they play.
Yeah, for me, it kind of made it a phew when that game ended rather than a celebration of like, okay, thank goodness they dodged that.
What are you guys talking about? I got to push back on both of you right now.
I was relieved, Tyler.
Not playing Avalanche hockey. They dominated. They absolutely kicked their butt.
But normally, they're playing all the small things in the third period because they're up 6-2 and everybody's, you know, taking the early victory lap, Rachel.
Well, I don't know how the post grew, but they grew last night. I mean, I don't know how to account for that, but I mean, we can't act like the Avalanche didn't play good hockey.
Rachel, was it a relief or was it a celebration when they won last night?
Definitely more of a relief. Don't get me wrong. People celebrated, but it was definitely, there were a lot of, okay, we can take a breath when it should have not even come down to that. You can't, Tyler, you can't say that they dominated the game when it went into OT. Yeah, the possession may have dominated. But the fact that they weren't putting anything in the back of the net when they took, what, 54 shots, I want to say, something crazy like that, compared to 25, like, sure, they could have dominated, but that doesn't mean that their line changes went smoothly. It doesn't mean that the possession was good quality possession time.
They had one bad moment.
No.
They had one bad moment on the line change there on what should have been a great penalty kill. But, yeah, absolutely, I could say they dominated. When you've got 54 shots on net, and by the way, 13 of those in overtime, you did what you needed to do. You kept the puck on their end of the ice. Darcy had a few good saves in there, but he really didn't get threatened all too much. You guys are so off.
Cale Makar botched.
Rachel, don't hang out with James so much.
Cale Makar botched clearing the puck. That turned into a goal. Sam Girard tried to backhand pass that turned into a breakaway. Then the Avs had to wind up taking a penalty that turned into the power play that led to the goal because they had a bad line change. They had all kinds of offsides penalties that just was, they were out of sync, Rachel. Now we're getting positioned here as being negative. So let me spin it forward to game two and being positive. I think that was the Blues' best shot. I think that was their opportunity to steal one, to make the Avs a little nervous, to get that second round storyline kind of going again. I think the Avs come out tomorrow night and it's the 6-2, 7-2 score we should have seen last night. What do you think on that?
Let me also put a positive spin, is that we have such high expectations for how this team should play, and they did not play to that level last night. We're all happy they got the win, trust me. It was a huge sigh of relief, but I know that they can play better hockey. You could probably ask Jared Bednar, and he would say that they could play better hockey because of how the game went. Again, a positive spin on that is that we know how well this team can play, and it just didn't feel like they played to that level. So, yeah, I do think that the Blues really gave it their best shot last night, and I don't think it's going to go their way in game two. But I guess that's why you play the game of hockey, right? Like, it's why you play sports, because you never know what can happen. But I fully expect this Avs team to go out there and really show that they're in Mile High City and they're playing Avalanche hockey, and this team wants to go all the way.
You know, I feel like I'm opposite on you guys on everything here because, number one, I feel like the Avalanche played awesome. They had a few moments that hurt them, but they were in control. And I'm actually a little bit – I certainly understand why you guys would say the floodgates are going to open up and the Avalanche are going to dominate moving forward. But I actually have got the opposite feeling. Like, I wonder if part of me feels like we're not showing this team enough respect. Like, they did not have an offensive showing last night, the Blues. And that is an offensive firepower. I mean, that is a powerhouse that they've got over there. They have got a ton of offensive weapons. And they just didn't show it. They didn't get the shots on net. I'm a little bit more nervous than you guys, I think, about what's happening in the future. I'm not sure if I'm lumping you into the same category as James, Rachel, but I'm a little bit nervous that we have not seen the Blues' best effort just yet.
I think that they had their best shot at getting momentum in this series when they went up 1-0, and that was their time to shine if they wanted to keep it going. Right? Like, if you can get up the first goal of a series, you're on away ice, you're not at home, like, that's your time where you really need to be able to push and make a point, and it just didn't happen. They came back in the third, right? They were able to tie it up to push OT, but I think that that was really their moment, that if they were going to make a statement, it was going to be right after that and put three in the back of the net, per se.
Yeah, I'm with you, Rachel. I think when they tied it at two and then it turned into, hey, it's just going to, if you get a lucky bounce, you could steal the game here. I think that was their best opportunity. I'm gonna remain an optimist, but despite Tyler trying to talk me out of it, I think they roll tomorrow night. Hey, Rachel, I don't think we should take too much credit, but since we started doing Avs post game, they haven't lost a game. They're 5-0. So hopefully we can keep the streak going tomorrow night.
Are you guys
wearing
the same clothes?
No, but I got this playoff beard that's starting to drive me nuts. You got to tell me how to get through this.
Well,
stage,
you just got
to
be a man. You got to power through it. Yeah,
because I got it going. I'm gonna keep it going. The plan is all the way till they win the cup. But Rachel, hopefully tomorrow night we do our sixth consecutive post-game show after a win. You'll be down at Ball Arena. Will Peterson and I will join you. So we appreciate you coming on and giving us some perspective, offering a little bit of a sense of reality about last night and optimism about tomorrow night.
Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
all right,
Rachel.
There she goes, DenverFan.com's Rachel Vigil, joining us on the Johnson Auto Plaza Hotline.
You got, what is wrong with you guys? I mean, seriously.
I said they're going to win 6-2 tomorrow.
Okay, that's cool. But, I mean, how could you look at that game and be like, oh, the Avs didn't play well?
Because they were sloppy. They made mistakes that they don't normally make. They didn't have offsides penalties. They didn't have bad line changes.
I was probably wrong when I said one. I think there were two moments that was very sloppy for the Avalanche, and unfortunately it hurt them on both of those. But when you keep the puck on their end of the ice as long as they do, shoot, I mean, they had that clock up there. How long the possession has been for the Avalanche. It was like totally normal. Every time they'd go down there, 30, 40 seconds down there on their end of the ice, that's a dominating performance. And, you know, I do agree in the big picture. That probably was the Blues' best shot to steal one. And eventually when you put 54 shots on net, you probably should land 5 or 6 of those. So maybe the floodgates do open up, but there's just a small part of me that's wondering, was that really the Blues' best chance, or did the Avs just get unlucky last night? Because the Blues, they didn't have the offensive firepower that they usually do.
I think that's by design, though. I think they did a lot of what we saw Nashville do, particularly in Game 3 and Game 4, almost like a soccer team when they get
a lead
and just shell up. It's like, we're just going to play defense. Yeah. We're not going to attack and get caught with an odd man rush coming the other way. And, you know, we're certainly not going to take penalties and put the Avs on the power play. I think they played a very conservative, try to keep this thing close and then get one or two bounce our way. And you know what? It nearly worked for them. But they certainly didn't play like a team that, I think they have five guys on the roster who had 20 goals.
Mm-hmm.
In the regular season, they didn't look like that kind of team yesterday.
I think it was more than that, wasn't it? I thought it was like seven.
It might have been seven.
Yeah.
Seven guys had more than 20 goals. So they didn't play like that at all. But I don't think it was anything that the Avs were doing to necessarily take it away. I think it was just sort of they were like, hey, we're just going to sit back. We're going to make it tough on you. We're going to try and frustrate you with the fact that, you know, you're taking shot after shot after shot and not getting anything for it. I think it was their game plan. I think they actually executed it to perfection, and they still lost, which means maybe tomorrow night they go the other way, panic, and try and try something else, and right. I think it could get away from them.
Right. All I know is if you keep 53, 54 shots on net, that should be a 5-1 type of performance. So I hope game two looks like that, my friend.
I hope so as well. This is KKFN and KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.